This part of Ireland, the northwest quadrant of the country, is sort of the most remote, least populated, least visited area. And it's also historically the place that people go to get away and to hide out. You know, when I went up there and saw how beautiful that place was, and which I liked the idea of contrasting that beauty with this dark story and violence and so forth. Yeah, I wanted to take advantage of it. I wanted to, you know, initially I started, okay, well, we'll start in Belfast, but then I want to make it clear that we're moving far from there.
Hello, and welcome back to The Director's Cut, brought to you by the Directors Guild of America. In this episode, a man is forced to fight for redemption after a lifetime of sins in director Robert Lawrence's mystery thriller, In the Land of Saints and Sinners. The film tells the story of Finbar Murphy, a man eager to leave his dark past behind by living a quiet life in a remote Irish fishing village. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, he is forced to choose between keeping his secret identity hidden or defending his community from the encroaching violence. In addition to In the Land of Saints and Sinners, Lawrence's other directorial credits include the feature films The Marksmen and Trouble with the Curve. Following a screening of the film at the DGA Theater in Los Angeles, Lawrence spoke with director Brian Helgeland about filming In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Listen on for their spoiler-filled conversation.
Rob and I have worked together twice. Rob produced two movies that I wrote, but we're here tonight in our preferred incarnation at our preferred place. So thank you for coming. Rob's kind of the poster child for the DGA, I think, in a lot of ways, because he started out ended up as a first AD and matriculated to director. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that kind of journey of how that all came about.
I moved out here, wanted to direct, write and direct like you. And I figured as a young guy that if I got on a movie set, if I was lucky enough as a director, I wouldn't have anywhere near as much experience as the whole crew. So I thought I better get some experience first. So I started working on set and became an assistant director and enjoyed it a lot, but figured it wouldn't last very long. I was going to move on to directing. And then I hooked up with Clint, and it was a really good working relationship. And I got to work on really nice projects and with cool people. And he just kept promoting me and bringing me along. And it was just really difficult to break away from it. Eventually I just told him, after American Sniper, I said, that's it. No more. I can't, I'm getting too old. If I don't start really focusing on my directing career, I'm never going to do it. So I just left him and started doing my own stuff.
Yeah, no, it's always like, how do you become a director? It's the first person you have to convince is yourself, really. And can you talk about how this came to be, this particular film?
I was sitting around at home and somebody called me. They said Liam had read this script and he quite liked it, and he had suggested me to direct. We had a really good working relationship on a movie called The Marksman, which we'd done a couple of years prior. And I read it and I loved it. And I thought I never would have been probably considering it, the Irish nature of it, but I do have Irish heritage. My mother is Mary Josephine O'Callaghan, and
that qualifies.
Yeah. I was all in and headed off to Ireland.
So when you get there and you're gonna, I'm assuming you worked with a local crew more or less, except for the Tom Stern, the DP, and Irish actors. And what was that like, that kind of coming in there as a Yank?
well, uh, I was, you know, Irish folks are incredibly kind and accommodating. So there was no issue there. I mean, I really wanted it to be as authentic as possible. I wanted an entirely Irish cast, and I wanted to use as many Irish crew people as possible, because I was a little worried about, you know, the criticism, of course, I would get being an American directing this movie. But also, I like movies that are just really authentic and really transport you to another place. So I just thought, as many people as possible, I wanted to be surrounded by that really new Ireland, a new this history and so forth, so I could take advantage of them and that they could all keep me accurate.
Do you think being an outsider on some level gives you a perspective that
helped? Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I first got the script, I had to read it with my computer because there were so many Irish terms and phrases that I wasn't sure about, and I kept having to look them up. And so the script was really Irish, and I think that was something that the producers that hired me were concerned about. I know they were. And so to have it sort of filtered through an American, I made a few changes here and there to make it a little bit more understandable.
I really like the tone in the film, and I think it's so kind of offhandedly done in a way that you don't feel I think it's really complicated to pull that kind of tone off with, you've got the humor and you've got the lightness and you've got the darkness, and many times the scenes have to have all that going at the same time rather than just one scene playing this and one playing that. And it's definitely a feel and an instinct, but how did you sort of maintain that and go about that as you went from prep to shooting?
Yeah, that was of great concern to me, because there's not that many people that do it well, you know, Coen brothers and Art McDonough and a few others, but not that this is compares to theirs. So I was concerned about that, and I never really kind of settled on anything, one method, but I just, other than to just try and be as truthful as possible in everything, you know, with the performances and everything, just try and make it feel as real and believable everywhere I could. And just follow my instincts in terms of, what was, funny, but not too funny, and that it made it ridiculous, and what was violent, but not too violent, that took you out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought a great example, it's a throwaway thing really, but I thought a great example of it was when things are really coming to a boil and he goes into the local store and the local guy at the counter says, you never bought the paper before. And he says, I never saw you sober before. It's a way of telling him to mind his own business. But that joke is funny, but it's also, you know, it shows what a small town it is, and it shows that why are you buying the paper? What's up? You know, and all that. And to have all that going in that one little moment, I think is a good example of how you pull that off.
Yeah. Credit goes to Mark McNally, who was the writer that originally wrote the first draft. So a lot of that humor was in the script, and that particular scene was there too. I will say, like, that role of Pat, the shopkeeper, there was a lot of people that read for that. If I'm most proud of anything, it's that I held my own on casting, because I was really pushed to cast some people that were a lot funnier, like, but over the top funny, just funny, fun, you know, like, and they really played it up. And I just said, no, that's not the tone. I want this guy who's funny just because he's playing it so deadpan. And so I held out for that character and for several others that I think worked pretty well.
And now, speaking of the cast, it's really like a heavyweight group of Irish actors. It's, you know, Kerry Condon, Jack Gleason, Colm Meaney, Ciarán Hinds. I would be intimidated, and Liam, how did you approach that? Did you rehearse, or when you first met them, how did you go about it, and how'd that all just work?
I learned from Clint all those years is just to be really objective in the casting process. And if you get that right, you know, your job is 90% done as a director. And just was really careful in the casting process of making sure that that I was finding people that just were right and had the right take on the characters. None of them are intimidating people. They're the kindest people in the world. Kieran Hines is such a sweetheart. And Carrie, you know, her character in Banshees is where she's that lovable, sweet person, is much closer to her real personality than this. But I was really excited to get her. She, I just have always thought that she just has this, you know, she's very pretty, but she has this underlying toughness and that I really felt that the character needed in order to be able to stand up to Liam, who's, you know, 6'4" and brings with him, you know, this background of being such a tough guy.
You think he's in trouble, you know. I wouldn't want her mad at me. Is that?
Yeah. So she was, Banshees hadn't been made when we started this. And I first suggested her and everybody looked at me like, who? And I'm like, oh, she's such a really great actress. And everybody just said, you know, the international salespeople were saying, you know, no. And then we got further along in the process, and as we always do, and you're churning through actors' schedules and things. And it was 2 weeks from filming and we still hadn't cast that part, but and the whole time I had been harping on this Carrie Condon idea. And by then Banshees had been shot and I think it had played at a festival. So there was some buzz. I think the producers just basically threw up their hands and said, okay, fine. Liam was a little bit help, not at first, cause he didn't know who she was either, but I said, well, your friend Kieran worked with her on a TV series. And so he called him and he called me back. He says, oh yeah, Kieran says she's good. So, okay, I'm good with her.
I mean, speaking of Liam, it's, you know, he's delivering to a certain extent on his action persona. But at the same time, you can feel him. I could feel his enjoyment as an actor doing some of those kitchen table scenes and, you could feel him, I thought, just really enjoying himself, sort of letting some of that go and embracing some of the stuff he used to do and that kind of stuff. And can you talk about that a bit?
I think he was really comfortable being back in Ireland, and Kieran Hines is his best friend. And so they were staying together at a house in town. And so he was just, and he had his people around him. He was just enjoying himself. And you see him on screen all the time and he does a really, I think, quite good American accent. But there he was, you know, let that all go. And he was just, and he got more and more Irish as we, as we went along. And I think in the car scene with the young guy, who's from Belfast, who's got a really thick accent, in that scene, even Liam starts to get difficult to understand because he's just really falls back into his old, North Ireland accent. But no, I think he did enjoy himself, and, I think I think he's just terrific. And, it's just a matter of, when you get to the editing room, making the best choices and letting him have that time. I mean, it's so often I feel like, I don't know. I see some of his other movies and I thought, where's the Liam that I know was there? They cut it out. But if you just give him a little moment, he does wonderful things. He knows what the shot is. He knows where the camera is. He knows where to move his eyes, you know, all that stuff that you really appreciate when you get in the editing room and you need him to be looking at the right direction at the right time so that you can cut to that. And he just knows all that stuff. It's really a pleasure to work with somebody like that.
It's a period film. So 74, is it? And obviously, you know, it's one of the, do we have enough money to do the period? We don't, there's nothing worse than period that can't afford itself and gives itself away. But I thought you did a very elegant job of setting it in the period, but not having us feel the period.
Right.
It felt contemporary, but not in a, you never cheated that. And whether it's the costume design, I think, which was exceptional in it, obviously picture cars and things like that, but they have to be well-placed and all those. Can you just talk about that challenge of all that?
Yeah, well, when I first went to Ireland to start scouting, they wanted to show me all these places around Dublin that they said that we could film, and because they would be convenient to hotels and restaurants and stuff. And I said, okay, but that's fine. But I know the writer, I'd spoken to the writer, and he had specifically set it in this town of Glencolumbkill. So I said, I want to see that first. Oh, it's way out there. You don't want to go that far. Well, I just want to see it. So when we went out there, I realized, you know, it's just a place that's frozen in time. It's just, you felt like you were back in the 70s. So a lot of credit goes to the location. And Derek Wallace, our production designer, he did a great job as well. So, yeah, it was just a matter of again, just trying to be authentic. There's kind of a patina to all the cars and everything over there, an age that everything has. So it just kind of felt right. But the costume design, I was really thrilled with Leonie, who's our costume designer. She came up with some great stuff you might appreciate. She came in with style boards for the different characters. And Finbar, Liam's character, she had a picture of Steve McQueen from Bullet on there. I said, oh, God, that's my favorite movie. And so she recreated, he wears the blue sweater and a tweed jacket. She recreated that look that he had throughout that. So I loved that.
You know, it's great. And, you know, we talked about her a bit, but as far as the Dorian as the villain, I thought, and I know some of it's in the script, but I just thought it was very even-handed and very, especially you have this tough character and blows people up at the beginning of the movie. But when her inability to leave her brother behind, mm-hmm. and her care for her brother, which is great, just completely grays her up and makes her complicated. And I very much appreciated that it wasn't just some, you know, person he's got to hunt down at the end and we're all happy that she's gone.
Yeah. Those scenes I thought were really important to show her humanity at the beach and then caring about her brother and stuff. Because otherwise she was just this enraged person the whole time. So I thought that those gave a balance to her character, and she was always very concerned. She's, you know, is that too much? Is it over the top? And I'm like, no, I wanted her to be really tough and dangerous in those scenes, but then to be soft in the others. And again, why I was thrilled to get her for that role.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways she drives the film, and we're reacting to her.
Yeah.
And then at the final scene between the two of them, she heads off and he's in pursuit of her, very, you know, soft press. She's hurt, obviously. She's not going anywhere too fast. But I remember when I was watching it, I thought, what's going to happen in there? You know, what kind of, and I wasn't looking forward to a shootout in the church, not because it was a church, but just it didn't feel like that's how it should end. And then it didn't. And that scene between them, which becomes the final shootout in a way, I thought was very satisfying.
Yeah.
That you didn't end up just having a shooter in there and trade bullets.
Yeah, I was. There was an effort to add more action, you know, throughout, and I kind of resisted that. I thought there was enough. I did add a few things. Well, I added the bombing in the beginning. That wasn't in the original script. It just started with the town, and I didn't think that was, I wanted to make sure people understood how dangerous these people were, and a few other things. But yeah, by the time we got to the church, what I liked about that scene is where Liam says, you know, we all have our reasons. he says that to her when she said, I had my reasons. And he said, we all have them. And that to me was the whole idea that I was going for, is that everybody kind of has to create their own moral code. Cause even though this guy's a killer, he believes what he's doing is right. And she believes in Ireland and she believes what she's doing and right. And as long as everybody feels like they're doing what they're supposed to be, you can track it and empathize.
Yeah, no, it's that great moment where one of the bomb makers is saying, we got to get out of here. We got to leave, you know, go to France or wherever they're going to go with the money. And she's mystified. Like, right. How leave?
Yeah.
We're fighting for this, you know?
Right.
Also, just to back up a little bit, I thought that small town, I always think every movie can create its own world in a way and take you to a place you haven't been. And it doesn't have to be, you know, the surface of Venus or anything like that. It can be this little insular town. And the insular nature of it felt very good because they had left, you know, as they call them, the troubles hadn't touched them in a way.
Right.
Yeah. that they knew of. And I thought that worked very well for all that.
Yeah, it was actually, we sort of comped together a few little towns to try to get, you know, the main street and the bar, and they weren't quite all together, but I tried to make it feel like they were. But this part of Ireland, the northwest quadrant of the country, is sort of the most remote, least populated, least visited area. And it's also historically the place that people go to get away and to hide out, you know, literally and figuratively. So a lot of people throughout history, but especially during the Troubles, would go there to hide. In fact, I was doing some research prior to it, and I read about this guy who was an IRA member who in the early 2000s, some documents were released, and it turned out that he had been an informer. So he had to go into hiding. And so he went up, of course, to Donegal, which is where this was filmed. And of course, they tracked him down, and he was living in a little white cottage, no electricity, no power, no water. And they killed him. And the article I read had the picture of the place there. And it just stuck in my head. And we were out shooting, looking for driving shots. And I saw this white cottage, and it looks like that place, but it can't be. They're everywhere. And an hour later, this guy walked up. He says, you know, that cottage over there, that's where they killed Dennis. And I thought, oh, that's the place. So anyways, the place is full of history, and it really was a place for like a character like Finbar to go and hide out and get away. And
yeah, and I think it informs, and you feel it, even though you can't articulate it as an audience member. The landscape shots and the driving and the coming in over the, I don't know what they call those exactly, where those cuts are in from the sea and all that stuff. But was that in the script, or was that a thing once you started seeing all that stuff? And because it works very well as to take you from scene to scene and to create mood, as you know. And
right. Yeah. No, it wasn't in the script, but... you know, when I went up there and saw how beautiful that place was, and which I liked the idea of contrasting that beauty with this dark story and violence and so forth. Yeah, I wanted to take advantage of it. I wanted to, initially I started, okay, well, we'll start in Belfast, but then I want to make it clear that we're moving far from there. So there were some drone shots that took us out there. And then I did a couple days of shooting on weekends and cut it all together. And I thought it looked quite good. And the producers were very keen on those shots. And they said, well, can you go back and get more? And I said, well, yeah, but I don't want to overdo it, you know? So I did go back up and got a few more that I was just on the edge there. I don't know, maybe others feel differently. Maybe it was too much, but it was just so beautiful. I did end up using a lot of them.
No, well, I think you pulled off the trick, which is to make it feel like a part of the character of the film. And you sort of in for a penny, in for it. Once you start doing it, you can't let it go, really. Say something.
It was beautiful up there. It was a really a wonderful place to be. You know, it's cold and wet and rainy, but we just kind of kept weaving the schedule through the weather to get just what we needed. Though it got dark early, and that was a little bit of a, it got dark late, which was a little bit of a challenge because we had night work, and the production manager is a great Irish guy, but he, you can't shoot after 11. And I said, what do you mean I can't shoot after 11? He's like, oh, it's just not done. I said, what do you mean it's not done? And he says, well, you know, the grip, the electricians, they run everything and they don't want to shoot after 11. And I said, okay, well, I got on a lot of night work that I have to get. And so initially it was, he wanted me, you know, so the sun wasn't going down till 9 and when we started, and then 10 later. And I said, so I have an hour to shoot. And I had to break these scenes up over. And I said, I can't do that. You have to give me at least one or two nights that I can shoot a lot of stuff, because it was just too difficult. So worked that out, but I still liked shooting there.
And could you talk a little bit about working with Tom Stern, your DP, and how you guys approached it?
Yeah, Tom is a longtime friend. We've worked together on many Clint Eastwood movies. And I just called him up and said, hey, you want to come to Ireland for a little while? Yeah, sure. He lives over in France. So it wasn't a long trip for him. But just having worked together for so long, scouting all those movies together, you know, Clint doesn't scout his movies. So it was always me and Tom flying around scouting. And so we just have an easy working relationship, and he knows what I like. And I needed somebody on my side. I wanted as many Irish people as possible, but I needed a couple people that I knew that I would be loyal when things got tough. So Tom was one of them. And then of course, Paula, my first AD, shout out to Paula. She's the greatest. So I brought her too, but we were the three Americans.
So what is it, someone who started out as a first look for in a first?
Well, someone who can do my job. Coming up, that's how I always felt, you know, as a PA and then a second. And I always wanted, I always wanted the person below me to be good enough to do my job so that I could be free to do my boss's job, you know? So, when I was a first, I was always trying to do whatever Clint did. I always thought like a director and thought about, well, okay, what does he want? What is he looking for? What does he need? And so if you've got someone below that's supporting you, making sure that your job is covered, that frees you up to do that. So, I think she could direct too. So she's very, very capable. She's very calm, which is what I like. I like a very calm set, and, just thoughtful and mature, and, just makes it easy.
Nice. And we touched on this a little bit, but it's a slow burn film in a way. And you have the action at the beginning to kind of propel you into the story, but then we got to get to know people, and we got to get the lay of the land and see what's up. I think all that has to be done with a real confidence that those characters can hold the audience's attention and get you to the point of where things take off. And how did you approach that? And you talked about it a little bit, but just. Yeah.
There was some stuff early in the script that I liked, but it was taking up a lot of time, and I was conscious of that. So I kind of montaged through stuff. And he tells Robert that he doesn't want to do this anymore, and then he leaves, and then you see him washing his boots and hanging up the gun and talking to the cat and pulling it. You know, those are all individual scenes. And I said, okay, that's going to take too long. So I said, we're going to montage our way through that and try and just to kind of chug through it. But I think the greatest thing was just the characters were really rich, well-written. And then the cast that I was lucky enough to get just made each of those things really interesting. So, and they held your interest. Jack Gleason, who played Kevin, so many young men that came in to read for that part.
He's great.
Yeah. And when I saw him, I was like, that's the guy. But his first audition, he came in and he did it with a really thick Irish brogue, and he looked kind of a little maniacal. And the producers were like, well, not that guy. And so I didn't say anything, and I called the casting director. I said, could you ask that guy, Jack, to come back in, but comb his hair and tell him to not do it with an Irish accent, you know, try and clean it up. So he came back in and did it again. And I don't even know if the producers recognized it was the same guy, but they're like, oh, this guy's really good. And I was like, yeah, I think so. So, so I learned my years with Clint how to manipulate things a little bit, get people to do what you want. I learned early on that, you know, you tell people what you want and you set it up, you know, a contest. So it's better if you just plant the seeds and let them think that they figured it out themselves.
No, nice. And I think you planted some great seeds in this film. I love the you hold your powder, so to speak, on the paint, the burgundy paint, and we see it at the very beginning, and then it's not till the end it pays off. And I think the whole movie pays off really beautifully, Rob, and congratulations on the whole
thing.
Thank
you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for listening to another DGA Q&A. The Director's Cut is available wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share, subscribe, rate, and review. We'd love to hear your feedback, and you can help fellow film buffs find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is produced by the Directors Guild of America.